Oh, wow. What a week. Basketball had a big game. As usual, this basketball team is unbelievable. I couldn't be more impressed with this team so far. Don't worry. We're going to get to the USC game. But this basketball team. So the week before, they beat Baylor, who was number 20. Oregon was number 25 at the time. This last week, they beat Valparaiso.
Yeah, Valparaiso was a tournament team last year.
And they won, what was the final score here?
73-67.
Like,
Dylan Brooks dropped a career-high 26 points.
All these guys are showing up. Who is Dylan Brooks exactly? Is he the transfer?
No, he was a freshman last year.
That's right.
He's one of the... It seems like Dana Altman just loves having like half of his roster be from Canada. They've got some serious talent north of the border.
Oh, I remember Dylan Brooks now, yeah. But yeah, Chris Boucher's from Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
Elgin Cook is from Milwaukee, which might as well be Canada.
Close enough.
Dylan Ennis is from Brampton, Ontario. East Lansing, Michigan. Trevor Manuel, that also might as well be Canada. Because I'm sure... I don't know if you've been to East Lansing, but I wish we could just call that Canada. It is the worst place of all time.
We might as well just annex it to Canada.
Yeah, just like, you can have it. We'll take Toronto. We'll give you the Dakotas.
We'll do a swap here.
Yeah, straight up. Yeah, this team. I remember Dave Piper. Shout out to Dave Piper. Dave Piper was like all about, he was just so psyched about this team.
I'm just picturing like around Oregon basketball that the gif, like the "it's happening."
Oh yeah. Like everything's finally coming together.
Yeah. That's my feelings of when I think Oregon basketball, that's what I think of.
Man, I'm psyched. This team is gonna be so much fun. It seems like there's someone different, like, every time who is just stepping up. And so last time, there was, like, a bunch of shooters who had over 10 points. So, but Dylan Brooks might be the go-to guy. But then Tyler Dorsey also had 21 points. I mean, it's nice to see it kind of spread out between a guard and a forward. So I think there's a lot of potential. Jordan Bell is the guy I like a lot. I like him.
Jordan Bell, it's always a block party. He's such a clutch guy defensively too.
Yeah.
He'll block like three shots a game, no problem, at least.
Yeah. And I'm looking at these heights and everything, because I remember in the past there was a small issue with our guys just not being nearly tall enough.
Mm-hmm. And we have that now.
Right. I mean, Elgin Cook is a 6'6 forward. Dylan Brooks is a 6'7 forward. I mean, obviously these guys aren't going to be like NBA forwards.
Mm-hmm.
But then like Casey Benson is 6'3. Tara Dorsey, 6'4. This is a pretty solid group. It's a pretty good group.
Yeah.
So.
And then we finally got some length with Chris Boucher being 10. I was about to say 10 feet tall. Might as well be 6 feet 10.
That's tall. That's a long dude.
That's a lot of height under the rim.
Yeah. And it's crazy how big those guys' wingspans are, too. Like they say, like, is it Da Vinci's? Like, what's the guy's name? I'm trying to remember what his name is. It's like the, Vitruvian Man.
Are you thinking of the crazy drawing with, like, the arms in, like, 10 different directions?
Yeah. And it's 4 different directions. where it's like
4, 10, you know, yeah,
same thing. Yeah, 8 limbs. And it's like your like wingspan is almost exactly the same as your height. And you see guys who are like wide receivers or like defensive ends who really need to get like separation from people, and their wingspans are just enormous, like disproportionately large.
Which is what you need.
It's definitely preferred. Because, you know, especially if you're a defensive end and you need to get, like, the pop to keep distance, like, arm length is huge. And then it's, like, even, like, although sometimes those metrics are just get, like, so unimportant. Like, people are measuring, like, pinky to thumb on at the combine for quarterbacks. So who cares? Like, honestly, like, who cares? People. Yeah. Or, like, how they still have linemen run 40-yard dashes.
Well, that's just funny to watch. Come on.
It's dumb.
That's just good. That's just good old-fashioned American entertainment right there.
As muscular and as athletic as they are, it's still, like, fat people doing things. And, except these people do it faster. These 300-pounders run faster than you do.
Not, oh, exactly.
Maybe not you, because you run a lot. But 90% of the people watching the combine. So, man. All right. So, next up for Oregon basketball. So, we're recording this on the 24th. By the time this goes up, Arkansas State will be tipping off in like a couple hours. Next Monday, Fresno State, 5 p.m. on the Pac-12 network. Then hosting UNLV on December 4th, hosting Navy. At Boise State, hosting Irvine, hosting Beach, December 21st.
We get Bama!
We get Bama. It's finally the Oregon-Alabama matchup.
All those years we've been chanting, we want Bama. Yeah. We finally got it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's basketball, but we finally got it.
Yeah. January 3rd is when Pac-12 season starts. Open at Oregon State. Then hosting Cal, like hosting Stanford at Utah.
I was like kicking off the Pac-12 slate with a good old Civil War matchup.
Yeah.
That could be a tough little stretch, though. It seems like the Civil War basketball game in Corvallis is always like respectable and competitive.
Yeah.
And then Cal, Stanford, Utah, Colorado. Those are always tough games, and the Utah, Colorado ones are on the road. That's not an easy opening slate there.
Yeah, Oregon has been awful at Cal the last few years.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see, was it last year they finally broke the streak?
Last year they beat them for the first time since like 2008. I was at the game the last time they beat them before that, and I was like, I think I was in like my junior year of high school or something, and now I'm 2 years removed from college.
Man. All right.
It was frustrating being a UO student watching Oregon Cal basketball.
I remember watching Oregon basketball, and I never leave games early, but I came very close 1 year watching Arizona State play Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't even like, it was like the Utah game was like embarrassing. Like it was tough. But Oregon against Utah State in like 2010, when it was still at Matt Court.
Oh, yeah.
I remember you could just walk into the pit. Like, it was nothing.
Yeah.
And it was, watching them play Arizona State was one of the saddest things I've ever seen in my life. It was like watching someone take advantage of someone who had never played a certain video game before. Like, it was like an Oregon miss, Arizona State fast break, Oregon turnover, Arizona State fast break, Oregon, yep, like, miss shot, Arizona State shot, then Oregon gets a basket on, like, on a weird jumper. And it went, yeah, like, it was like that the whole game.
The game that Rusty here is talking about, Thursday, January 14th, against Arizona State, MacArthur Court, Oregon lost that game 76-57.
And it was not that close.
Yeah.
It was that close.
Yeah, it was it was ugly. But
it was like a fish trying to breathe.
We got much, much better outlook. Here's the question I'll pose for you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Oregon basketball can go undefeated heading into conference play?
Yeah.
Or is there a game that they're going to like get tripped up by?
I mean, I think they will. UNLV could be tough. UNLV, yeah, is just, I always think of them from like the Guru of Go stuff. Mm-hmm. So far, UNLV has beat Cal Poly, New Mexico Highlands,
nice,
Southern Utah. They lost to UCLA by 2. They won... Oh, but that was at the Maui Invitational. What's up, Maui? I love the cutaways. I was watching it today. They beat Chaminade by like 20. That game was awful. They play Indiana tomorrow, which I will try to watch.
Yeah, because that'll be their first road game of the season. December 4th, it'll be...
Oh, yeah. They're playing
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah. The game is in... We're going to UNLV.
Are you sure?
I'm looking at the schedule right now. December 4th at UNLV, and then at Navy. Again, sorry. Well, it's not at Navy, but it's Navy at Pearl Harbor.
Oh, it's at Pearl Harbor? Then,
mm-hmm.
Well, I'll be watching that game because it's in Hawaii.
6:30 p.m. Monday night, Fox Sports 1.
Two turned up, I can't turn down.
They go to Boise State, so that's the only...
I think the only game they can lose
is UNLV.
Yeah. That's the only one I could see them losing.
I could see a weird stumble losing to Alabama on the road, maybe, but not going to let that happen.
We host Alabama.
It's in Birmingham.
But I'm looking at it right now, and it says we're hosting.
What schedule are you looking at?
Looking at the Oregon Ducks basketball schedule. And it says opponent.
On GoDucks.com?
No, I'm looking at it on ESPN.
Oh, because I'm looking at GoDucks.com and it says Birmingham.
Maybe it's a neutral site. Quote, I'm using air quotes, neutral.
Neutral.
Well, I mean, Alabama doesn't have fans to begin with in basketball. So.
I don't even think they know they have basketball as a sport there.
Yeah, I think, what was it? They played, I remember one year, I think it was the national championship game, where Alabama beat LSU 21-0. And LSU never crossed the midline.
I remember that.
And then in the basketball game where LSU played at Alabama, the fans cheered whenever the basketball team crossed the midline.
Yeah, that was expert trolling.
So good. It reminds me a lot of when the Rams played Washington, and all the captains were players that the Rams got in the trade for Robert Griffin III.
Mm-hmm.
That was hilarious. So I'm just like,
I love all the trolling that happens like that.
Mm-hmm. Once we kind of get out of football season and it's like the darkest time of the year, I'll like really ramp up watching football and make it appointment watching. So, especially around the holidays right now, it's tough. So, on the other side, let's talk about football. Good old football.
Football!
Football! All right, so, Oregon played USC, obviously. This looked well in hand for pretty much the entire game. It was comfortable, except for like a spot in the third where I was kind of like, maybe got Oregon got a little too comfortable going up like 20 points or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I think at one point they were up like 31-14.
Yeah. And so at that point I was like, wow, this. And the biggest thing was, so the final score was 28-48, Ducks win. And USC looked really bad. Like, their defense was awful. And by defense, I mean secondary.
Mm-hmm.
Like, running was a non-issue. It's like when teams used to when our defense would play against teams, they wouldn't even run the football. Like, especially early in the year, like, our pass defense was so awful with, like, the inexperience.
Right.
I mean, that got shored up in, like, after the Utah game. Like, the Utah game was the last one where that was like, wow, this is...
That was the last straw where, like, it was just downright embarrassing what was happening to them.
Yeah, but then after that, they're, like, now they're, like, one of the best units. Which is further proof that Coach Neal is probably the best position coach in the country.
Yeah, talk about making something out of nothing there.
Yeah. Okay, so especially I want to point out one guy. Ugo Amadi.
Right.
Everyone first got introduced to him getting absolutely stiff-armed by the Eastern Washington receiver on his way into the end zone. He went up against a lot of people who were more experienced than he was. But he came in super highly ranked in recruiting. And against USC, he balled out so hard. He was guarding Juju Smith a ton. He made so many tackles in space. Also, mm-hmm. Joe Walker with 15 tackles. And they were good tackles.
Mighty like, Joe Walker.
Yeah, they were like chasing people. He was like going sideline to sideline. He was everywhere. Like, it was one of those games where, like, if you watch, like, you used to be able to do this with like Troy Polamalu on the Steelers, or like TJ Ward mm-hmm. with the Broncos, or like Jairus Byrd in the Bills. And you can just say, like, to anybody who's brand new, just say, just watch this guy on defense, and you'll be fine. Like, this guy will tell you everything that's important. He'll always find his way to the ball. And that's kind of what Joe Walker was this last game. And I think part of that is, too, is that they don't want to go after Coleman. Hardrick has been playing well. So it's like, if you're going to go after someone, it might be Walker, and he really stepped up. So, and the run defense was exceptional, like, the entire first half.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there were so many positives to take away from this game. Man, I was so impressed with the secondary. And the tackling in space was unbelievable. It was, like, such a nice change of pace from what we saw earlier at the beginning of the year. And like over the last few weeks especially, you can see the guys getting better and better, like noticeably better in like each and every facet of the defense. And
right,
this was like, wow, this defense is playing so well right now.
Yeah, and it's the whole thing really where like the defense is coming together. Vernon Adams seems unstoppable right now, and it's like, okay, you know, in a miracle situation, this team's going to go to a New Year's Six Bowl. But, you know, whoever, there was an SB Nation article the other day that said basically the pass is the pass, and the Ducks shot themselves in the foot by starting 3-3 and playing like crap at the start of the year. But they are probably the scariest team in the country right now, as far as like, if you're going to face a team, Oregon's probably the last team you want to face.
Oh, yeah.
Just because they are on just in fuego.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that, like, Vernon Adams just looks so comfortable now. Uh-huh. Like, he's just cruising. He threw for 407 yards and 6 touchdowns against USC. Like, I don't even remember that many games where Marcus Mariota went off like that.
Oh, no.
Like, I feel like Mariota had a lot of, like, just always solid games, but there weren't many that I remember from him where he just went off, you know?
Where he was, like, legitimately perfect in every aspect.
Yeah.
He never had, like, a great game. He was always exceptional. But, like, never really hit perfect ever.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I mean, fine. When you go, like, 24 of 27 for, like, 300 yards and 4 touchdowns. I don't know. Maybe he was playing like that all the time, and we just got way too used to it.
I think that's part of it. I think that by the end, we're just like, oh, it's just Marcus being Marcus.
Yeah.
But I think that we're noticing it from Vernon Adams just after, like, how frustrating it was watching him at the start of the year between just, like, getting hurt and then just... I mean, I remember I was earlier in the year on a previous podcast, I was super critical of the dude, and I basically called it a failed experiment.
I was there too. Yeah, so I was actually going to make a point to basically call my own BS, because I was so full of scorn after the Utah game, where I was like, this guy sucks. His broken finger does not matter. He has no pocket presence.
I think we were on the same page where we were like, screw Vernon Adams. Let's get the Jeff Lockie show going.
I don't think we tried that far. I think I left it at this. All our quarterbacks suck. That's where I was at.
We tried the whole Taylor Alley, Jeff Lockie dual quarterback system, and that just was a flaming pile of hot garbage.
Yeah. Although Taylor Alley played really well compared to what, like, the expectations were. But Vernon Adams is just like, it's so weird though how a finger would, like, negatively impact so many parts of, like, him just standing in the pocket and, like, not doing anything.
Yeah. I think it was an interesting point. I think Dave Piper brought it up on Twitter.
Uh-huh.
That he's not gonna win it. He's not gonna get an invite. But making the case of, and this is like, this will sound like a total Homer comment on Sling and Quack, but making the case for him being a Heisman finalist just based off of what he's done, like how Oregon looked without him, and then how Oregon is with him healthy, and just like having him be in that conversation because of being a pure impact player, and like he's literally just like changed this whole season once he got healthy for the Ducks.
I think it changed the offense, which made it easier on the defense when they get to play like from ahead.
Mm-hmm.
The defense has gotten way better in a vacuum, and especially too having Darren Carrington.
He's always open.
I don't understand. Okay, so side note, I looked up USC Oregon from 2012, which was at the Coliseum.
That was a fun game.
I remember being in attendance for this game because Kenyon Barner had 321 yards rushing. He had 26 yards receiving. And he averaged... Does it say how many averaged? He made it look so easy. like, he was just, like, on, like, gliding. Like, he was, like, snowboarding or skiing. Like, he looked so easy just getting all those yards. So.
Yeah, that game to this day remains the single greatest rushing performance I've ever seen.
Yeah. So, I think Marcus had 3 incompletions, and I think 2 of them were throwaways and 1 was a drop. He went 20 of 23 for 304 yards, 4 touchdowns, and then ran for 96 yards. I think we just got used to Marcus being perfect. I think that's what happened. Because we were like, dude, maybe he was just exceptional. No, he was pretty much perfect every single time.
And I like how we talk about the USC game. Like, oh, yeah, it was a good day for Marcus. But Kenyon Barner, though.
And Marcus was just unreal. Yeah, so reason number 1,628 why Marcus Mariota is one of the best college football players of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what he's kind of going to get nailed for, is how easy he made it look.
Right.
I feel like he just made it look so easy, and people aren't going to give him credit.
Yeah, so. It was a fun time when he was here.
Yeah, and I remember what's his name? Ted Miller was filling out like all Pac-12 teams or whatever, or all Pac-12 team. And he was like, first team, it was really tough, but I had to give it to Matt Leinart. It's like, why? Why'd you have to give it to Matt Leinart?
Mm-hmm.
Why? Tell me one thing he did better than Marcus Mariota. Marcus Mariota had less talented players. Clearly less talented players. He had better statistics across the board. He had more wins. He had more Pac-12 championships. And he had, like, he was just better in every single way. I don't know how you can be like, oh, Matt Leinart, like, clearly, like, better. And it's like, no, how can you even, like, he didn't even mention Marcus Mariota. It's like, how can you not mention Marcus Mariota?
Right.
Like, honestly, like, obviously, I'm an Oregon fan. But tell me one person. Give me one quarterback in the Pac-12 who was better. Show me just one. Show me one. I dare you. Whoever's listening, I dare you to show me one.
That is a straight up challenge.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't understand how people can just, like, he made it look so easy. So, back to the USC game. The one knock that we could have had on... Okay. Here, let's see this. What do you define a successful defensive performance as? Against USC.
Against USC, like, talent. Are we talking, like, points or yards?
Just
or?
General statistics, third down, passing, rushing, all that stuff.
Yeah, I would say an overall successful day on defense is if you can, you know, I mean, I think it goes without saying for any team. If you can hold them under 100 rushing yards, I think is a good benchmark always.
Okay.
I think if you can... If you can hold them to, you know, I think if you can hold them to under, because it seems like it's a bigger, like, it seems like college quarterbacks put up bigger numbers more frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think if you can hold them to under 200 passing yards.
That is aggressive.
That's aggressive, but.
So this is like an A+ performance.
Yeah, this is like. We're talking like the defense was the star. Yeah, under 200 passing yards, under 100 rushing yards, third downs less than, I'll give it less than 50%.
Okay.
That would be kind of the, and then, you know, points wise, under 20.
Okay, so USC had 28 points. They had 238 yards passing off of 41 attempts. So that's 5.8 yards per pass, which is really low.
Mm-hmm.
They rushed for 186 yards. Almost all of that came in the second half when Oregon was pretty much selling out on pass defense, because at that point USC was far behind. This is the average 4.9 yards a rush. And let's see, how many sacks did they have? Does it say they had one forced turnover? Arian Springs. So USC had about four bad snaps. Like, clearly bad, like not even debatable. And the second one was bad. I don't even think Arian Springs jumped in the backfield, hit Kessler from behind, ball comes out, Oregon recovers, and then the next play they score a touchdown to Charles Nelson.
Yeah, I think that was kind of the...
That was it.
I'd say that was probably one of the defining moments of that game, was that turnover, because at that point we were looking at... What was it here? So it was 38-28 at that point. Mm-hmm. It had been 31-14 at some point. So USC was within 10.
Right. They had the ball. Two scores.
And so they had the ball. And had they scored a touchdown on that drive, you're looking at, you know, suddenly we're within a field goal here. And then, right there, yeah, bam. Sacked by Arian Springs, fumble, forced by Arian Springs, DeForest Buckner comes up with it. First play, Charles Nelson, touchdown, game over.
Yeah.
Just, like, yeah. Literally game over at that point. That's...
Yeah, that was really the only point where I was like, oh man, USC might be crawling back into this one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they might just, like, kind of backdoor their way into a close game. Yeah, I don't even think Arian Springs was supposed to be blitzing. I think he just saw the ball go down and went for it. I'm trying to think of how many sacks Oregon had. I'm trying to figure out. Let's see if it says, like, in the recap how many sacks there were. I want to say, like, four. Man, I think there were four, which was huge. On third downs, USC was 6 of 15.
See, that's something that I would consider very successful.
Yeah, getting off the field. Had one forced one turnover. I think this defense played outstanding.
Yeah. Overall, I would... You know, those are... The standards I was giving was like...
Alabama.
This is... Yeah, this is like an unreal performance. I would say, considering it's USC and a very talented team and the weapons they have on offense, I'll take those stats as a win.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with how Oregon's defense has played this year, like giving up 700 yards a game.
That was after 108 plays. Yeah, but that was bad.
But it's bad.
Yeah, also shout out to the polar bear who tweets at me every week. He pointed out, we're going to get to this in a little, Stanford winning out, Oregon goes to the Rose Bowl if they make the playoffs. So... There was one rough spot for Oregon, and that is when they got backed up. Vernon Adams took like a 12-yard sack, and like we started the drive on the 6. Royce Freeman rushed for a first down, got a penalty, like a rush of no gain, and Vernon Adams took like a 12-yard sack that put us like back on the 6. follow that up with, Wheeler's basically got his heels in the end zone. He's normally you want to get that guy like 8 to 10 yards, and he's at like 6. Or he's at 10. Normally they want to get like 13 to 15 or something. Mm-hmm. So he is on an incredibly short, incredibly short distance from behind. Prime blocking potential for USC. So Oregon has to hold more people back. Not a good punt at all. And Adoree Jackson takes it back. So, I mean, he caught it on like the 40. R 40. So it's like that was going to be amazing regardless. And then when you have that many people back to protect, like the coverage is going to be awful. Mm-hmm. And he shredded. So that was the one where I was like, wow, this is that was a bad play.
Yeah.
And you could kind of see it like that entire time. You're like, all right, this isn't going to be good. And then as soon as he punts it, I saw how short it was. Like, oh, this is bad. This is real bad. And yeah. Everything is so spread out. I'm like, oh my God, he's just going to go for it now. Like, he's,
yeah. And that was.
Go ahead.
That was kind of where things were starting to go a little wrong. Like,
yes.
You had the punt return, and then Oregon went 3-and-out on their next drive.
Uh huh.
And had to punt it away again.
Right.
And you're like, oh, what's going to happen here? And then that's where the USC fumble came in.
Yeah, thank God.
I was talking about that last week. We need a better punter. Ian Wheeler is not going to... That's not going to work, dude.
Well, like, I feel like we got some more coming in.
Yeah.
So... I feel like that'll get figured out. I mean, we didn't have a kicker. Like, I don't count who our kicker was as a kicker for a while. Like, he hurt more than he helped. And now we have statistically the best kicker in the country. Isn't that weird? Like, I'm scarred from, like, all the missed field goals that were super, yeah. super important. So we talked about Ugo Amadi. We talked about Vernon Adams being unbelievable. Darren Carrington always getting open. I don't know how it's possible. I really want to emphasize, I really can't emphasize enough how bad USC's secondary was.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've never seen anyone more open in my life than when Evan Bayless caught it going down the left hash for the first passing touchdown.
Yeah, I saw a highlight of that one, and I was like, ooh. Who's covering him? Like, there's no one around him.
It was like the safety was like in cover one and he rolled over to the opposite side because there was like a deep threat. There was like trips to that side where there was two wide receivers to that side. They like went straight. Safety came back over the top, leaving like the left side exposed. And the middle linebacker like redirected Bayless. And then let him go. As soon as Bayless got like 5 yards off the line, I was like, he's so open right now. He is so yeah. open. And he was so open that I don't think... I believe he thought there was going to be someone behind him. Because he went back across the field to where people were. Like he had to think that there was someone behind him.
Mm-hmm.
Because when he catches the ball... on the TV broadcast, there is not a defender in the frame. I kid you not, there's not a defender in the frame, which stretches like from the right hash all the way to the other sideline and from like the end line to the 40. That is a huge amount of space, and there wasn't a single person in there.
Yeah, that's a big problem.
Unbelievable. And then they messed up Kenai Benoit touchdown. He was by himself. Josh Huff. I guess on the Josh Huff play, he just torched his guy who was like kind of on an island. Safety totally whiffed getting Darren Carrington. Ugo Amadi played amazing. Springs played really well. Charles Nelson. He laid wood. He dropped the hammer on a receiver coming across the middle.
Yeah.
Force an incompletion. I was like, I didn't know he could hit that hard. Crazy. just crazy. Also, I want to point out how badly timed USC penalties were.
Mm-hmm.
They had 12 penalties for... Let me look this up. I know they had 12 penalties for 124 yards. And they had them at some of the worst times, too. Like, it would be, like, first down. They had 3 false start penalties in a row. That was the first time, too, where it really felt like Autzen pre-2007.
It's like making an impact again.
Yeah. Or, like, people just being loud and people, like, really caring about this. And mm-hmm. not just kind of, like, sitting back, knowing things are going to work out or whatever. Like, but actually, like, really caring about the game.
Right.
So
knowing that every game isn't just going to be, like, a blowout and a given. And
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because for a while, it was like Oregon's team was just, like, a machine.
Yeah.
And it, like, did not matter anything that happened. And so now you feel, like, I feel like fans feel a little bit more. I know I do. I feel a little bit more, like, desperation. Like, every game is on the edge. And if, like, we just get this stop here, like, things will turn around and, like.
Oh, exactly.
And it's, like, every possession seems much more important now.
And yeah, it was, I mean, I remember just, you know, I didn't get to watch much of the USC game just because I was at work and working retail. And
you
so
need
when
to
I
knock
this,
that job off. You need to not work anymore.
You know, we had so many Pac-12 After Dark games, I was feeling good about it. And then I saw the 2 consecutive afternoon games. I was like, we had a good run. We had a good run.
Yeah.
But I just remember, like, I, you know, had the game pulled up on my phone when I could. And just with, like, you know, the slim Rose Bowl hope still alive. Like, that was probably the most interested I've been in a game since Michigan State. And yeah. It was refreshing just to have that, like, feeling of just being so, like, into the game again.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what I imagine was the environment at Autzen again, too.
Oh, yeah. And it was interesting because USC, you knew they had the talent. Like, everybody knows how ridiculous these guys are. But they aren't scary. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, when Reggie Bush and those guys came, it was like, this is Goliath. Like, these guys are unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And this time, like, because they were just an amazing team, especially with Lindale White. Lindale White doesn't get nearly enough credit to either. Like, you ask any, like, real diehard USC fan, and they're like, Reggie Bush was amazing, but Lindale White was the law.
Right.
Like, if you have, like, any real big play, very rarely did you see Reggie Bush handling it. It was always Lindale White. So, a much better college running back than pro running back. Because he always had weight issues, and at some point, like, it just doesn't cut it in the NFL. But, you know, if I could only pick one running back to have, based on their college performance, if I could only pick one running back out of those two for a team, that's all I got, I would pick Lindale White.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like, if it wasn't for Lindale White, Reggie Bush wouldn't have just been able to go off. So, apparently we're still in, people are still in on firing Scott Frost after 777 yards against Cal, a Pac-12 team, which was a school record, against USC, 578 yards of offense, 407 yards through the air on 25 plays, 171 yards on the ground, 4.5 yards a rush, a carry.
Doesn't matter. Get rid of them.
Oregon had 8 third downs the entire game. And they were long third downs, but apparently we're still in on firing Helfrich. Or on not Helfrich. Actually, people still are in on firing him. But talk about Frost. My favorite, yeah, I shit you not, excuse my language, I shit you not, a guy said this. This was after Oregon scored the 38th point and then Oregon gave up like a long third down. Mm-hmm. And I got a tweet. Rob Mosley was tweeting, just a general one. It's not like he was tweeting at me. Like the one time he was like really annoyed about me making a fire poem joke. He sends out a tweet that was like, after Boise State. It was like after Washington, Tennessee, and USC, Oregon has scored like 176 straight points. Mm-hmm. It was something like that against the Justin Wilcox defense. And then 5 minutes later, I hear, yeah, I mean, the defense has been doing a lot better, but I think Don Pelham is just a good position coach. And he needs to go back to being a position coach. We need some... We need someone like Justin Wilcox. Like, are you watching this game right now? Are you watching this game and you're saying that straight-faced? This defense is lost. This defense has no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
Oh my god, it was just... Do these people believe themselves? Like, honestly, at this point, I really wonder if they believe themselves.
Oh, they absolutely do.
How can you... It's just... It's unbelievable to me. I mean, just in all walks of life, how people will have these opinions and everything, and they won't have any facts or logic to back it up. And it's like, well, what about this? And they're like, I don't know. It's like, okay, let's not let the facts get in the way of your idea.
Yeah.
And it's just, oh my god. Especially when it comes to, like, college football and... Just, it's so frustrating to hear some of these people. Fire Frost, even though he's, like, replacing one of the best college quarterbacks of all time with a guy who was playing FCS a year ago. Granted, he's playing amazing right now. Well, of course, that's not because of Frost at all. It's unreal. I'm completely blown away sometimes. This team is going to finish...
If he does get fired, our friends over the Iowa State blog, Wide Right and Natty Light, which is just a fantastic name, by the way.
Yes. They love Frost.
Early potential candidates for the Iowa State head coaching position, and there is a giant picture of Frost's mug right there.
He won't go to Iowa State. Do you know why?
Why is that?
Because Nebraska's opening up after this next year. Yeah. I'm not joking when I say that either. Riley already had the vote of confidence from the athletic director 3 weeks ago. He's into his first year at Nebraska, and he already has a vote of confidence. Which means that that job is open after the next season. So,
be honest, if a head coaching job opened at the school, like, if you were a you know, offensive coordinator for Nebraska, and let's say that Oregon is just kind of like a mediocre program, and the head coaching job opened up at the school you went to, you would do it in a heartbeat.
Oh yeah, I don't even think like Nebraska like right now is kind of middle of the road. Mm-hmm. They should be significantly better than they are. They are drastically underperforming.
Yeah.
Historically, they've been fantastic. Granted, football has kind of moved away from like corn-fed Big Ten football, even though they've been in the Big 12 for so long. But like, they should be better than they are right now. They have no reason to not be that good. It's not like Miami, which had no tradition whatsoever, and then caught fire when all that money was coming in illegally, but you know, whatever, every program does that, including Oregon. And they are really aren't relevant anymore, but Nebraska has all that tradition and everything that, like, they could carry it through. They have like a different value proposition to sell to people. So that's a job that I think is actually really full. I mean, it's a great opportunity. Sorry, it's late when we're recording this. So yeah, I don't think he's gonna take Iowa State. Iowa State has not had like a good team in forever. Like,
yeah,
Scott Frost knows that he's coaching the Oregon offense, another better job will open up
to where he can hold
to
that.
Most established. Like, what's he going to do? Like, go to Iowa State, make $1.2 million a year where it could easily go terrible? Or is he going to just keep making, like, $650,000? Like, coaching the Oregon offense and then just wait for, like, the $2 million position to open up at a school where he can be successful?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, oh, $650,000 compared to $2 million, and it's, or, like, $1.2 million, and it's like... Yeah, but he's like early 30s. He does not care at this point. And it's not like $650,000 is like whatever. But it's just like, I mean, that's so much money still. You can sit it out a little bit.
You can wait for a better job.
Yeah. So, I mean, he could probably, after his few seasons coaching, he could probably retire already. So, I mean, if we're being honest with ourselves, he could retire already. Which is maybe my favorite quote, if we're being honest with ourselves. Whenever I hear that, I just laugh. So we're playing Oregon State Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. They might have Seth Collins back. It is still up in the air based on reports I saw earlier today, the 24th. Oregon State... not good. That is the nicest way of saying it. They are 2-9.
This one's not going to be close.
Their wins are over Weber State. Is it Weber State? Yeah, Weber State and San Jose State, which is a huge improvement. Woof. Because normally they drop the games to FCS teams. And I'm not joking when I say that. That was a huge improvement. I saw that and I was like, all right, Gary Anderson, I see you. I see you. Doing the right things. Meanwhile, they were actually competitive with Michigan for over a quarter. And, like, not competitive, but they clearly looked better for about 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, given that it's Oregon State against Michigan, is a huge sign in the right direction. Let's take a look. Yeah, so they lost to Michigan 35-7, lost to Stanford 42-24, lost to Arizona 44-7, lost to Washington State 52-31, but at that time Washington State was playing really well. Lost to Colorado 17-13, lost at Utah. Here was the one that puzzled me, 27-12.
Huh.
I think that they have their moments. They can do some things well. Like, if you take... they score a touchdown against Colorado. They maybe... what's... like, they keep it competitive with Utah. Like, this... we have, like, a very different perspective on this team. And this is a team, too, that's going to be awesome in 2 to 3 years. I mean, Gary Anderson went to Utah State... and with the help of Chucky Keaton, turned them into, like, one of the most impressive teams. Because Utah State was routinely on the ESPN bottom 10 teams.
Yeah, I remember the hype when they brought in Anderson and he put in the new spread offense. And everyone was getting... I mean, change is exciting, but it just kind of proved to be a transitional year for them.
Oh, for sure. I mean, they don't even have that much talent to begin with. Like, yeah. Their 3 stars are like our 4 stars. Or 5 stars.
Interesting side note. I'm reading a preview of the game and says last week Anderson said that Seth Collins was done for the year, but he was at practice on Monday playing wide receiver.
Maybe there's a problem with like his rotator cuff or something. And he just can't throw, but he can catch.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I mean, every player on this Oregon State defense was recruited to run like a pro offense. Like, actually, I'm going to be correct instead of saying it's going to bring a single back offense. So, a single back, heavy play action, So, I mean, it's one of those things where you have square peg, round hole, and you just kind of got to grind it out for a while. He's doing the best, really, that he can with it. Their last few games, though, lost to UCLA 41-0, lost to Cal 54-24, lost to Washington 52-7.
That is yeah, they've just been getting walloped.
That is not good.
I'm going to say score. I'm going to give this score one here. I'm going to say 56-14 Oregon.
Ooh.
I'm sensing a good old fashioned whooping coming. It's a rivalry game and anything can happen, sure, but
no, these teams are so far apart.
Yeah, this is like these two teams are just in such opposite directions.
Yeah. Like with Ohio State, Michigan, like if it was anybody other than Michigan, I would even say that Ohio State drops this one.
Mm-hmm.
But since it's Michigan, like they don't need. They're going to get up for it. So, like, Seth Collins was the only quarterback with a completion percentage higher than 50%. The other two quarterbacks, Mitchell and McCarron, have thrown more interceptions than touchdowns. Their leading rusher was Seth Collins with 536. Storm Woods is second with 491. Third is Ryan Nall with 281. Like, our top three rushers all have more rushing yards than their number one rusher.
Yeah.
And then they're just so bad, and I feel bad for that fan base, because that fan base deserves to have good things happen to them other than beating Oregon. So, I mean, they got Gary Anderson. Huge step in the right direction. I don't see any scenario. I mean, unless like the Mayan calendar like got it wrong and like the field splits open, we lose like the entire Oregon team.
Shoot, dude, I wouldn't even be mad. I'd just be watching that, but like, what did I just see?
Like Bane from Dark Knight Rises. And then even then, like, our walk-ons against them, I'd be like, all right, this will be close. Like, Oregon State will probably win, but this will be close. This will be competitive.
Bring in them, mix in some people from the student section. We can make it happen.
Yeah. Quick note. One of my favorite parts of the game was Dwayne Stanford catching a touchdown pass to go up 38-14. Him catching it, looking at the USC crowd, and then just eyeballing Tommy Trojan. There's like a picture and like a couple camera angles of him catching it, then like going to the side, and Tommy Trojan's like right in front of him, and he just stares at him for like a couple seconds. Man, this was such a great win, and it's crazy too. Like, here's the thing: I don't get like, granted, it was like a terrible start, but people are just letting that start ruin their whole perception of this team.
This team has been so much fun.
Like, granted, at times it's been like really stressful and I've almost passed out like the last three games.
That's the beauty of college football.
But like, when have we ever, like, I don't remember the last time I've ever cared more about like individual plays and everything.
Right.
Like, the game against Washington, I haven't cheered that hard for a win in so long. Like, I think I might have even cared about beating Washington this year more than I cared about the national championship game last year. Like, all week, like, with the national championship game, I was kind of like, it's going to be what's going to be. Our team is good. Ohio State's good.
Whatever happens, happens.
Whatever happens, happens. Like, it was such an accomplishment to get to this place in the first place. And, you know, as a fan, I can have the perception I'm happy to be here. It doesn't matter. That doesn't have an impact on the team. I know they're going to play their asses
off. We both said it going into the Washington game. We're like, win this game, and whatever happens after this is fine.
I do not care what happens the rest of the season as long as we beat Washington. And so as soon as we beat Washington, I was like, yep, cool, we're good. I'm fine. Season is a success. And now here we are, like, we haven't lost since then. Our only loss since the abomination that was the Utah game was to Washington State in double overtime. And now Washington State is, like, wrecking everybody.
Yeah.
So we beat Washington by 6 when Vernon Adams and Darren Carrington came back. Oh, yeah. So if Vernon Adams is healthy against Michigan State, Oregon wins that game.
Right.
We didn't, so I'm not going to be like, oh, we deserve to win that game. We didn't. Michigan State played better. We had, like, a couple huge plays go our way. But if Vernon Adams is healthy, he makes the plays to get it, even though Michigan State, I think, played better all around. Drop the game to Utah, because that game was awful. That team came in so unprepared. If you really want to get mad about one game of coaching, then that's the game you can get pissed about. Then Washington State, that game is not close if Vernon Adams is back and healthy. And then 26-20 over Washington, 61-55 in triple overtime over Arizona State. Cal was a 44-28 win. Stanford went down to the wire. USC was a 48-28 win. Like, this season has been so much fun. Like, every weekend, it's just like nuts. It's like anything could happen. So there's just enough unknown and unpredictability to make it exciting, and just enough winning to make it still fun.
If that makes sense.
So now we play at Oregon State. It's going to be a win. It's going to be great. And you know what? Oregon's going to finish 9-3. Whoever they're going to play in a bowl game, they're going to beat, like, based on how Oregon is maybe power ranked as one of the best teams in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And they're probably gonna end up in a 10-win season, and people are pissed. Like, that's ridiculous to me now. Like, a 3-3, it was a different place, especially after the Utah loss. And I think all of our statements stand based on, like, what we were talking about at the time. I think those were all accurate. Maybe saying that people sucked was a little early, but I was heated at the moment. But this was a really good team. And they're gonna win 10 games, and people are, like, pissed about it. Like,
welcome to Oregon football.
It, like, what happened? Like, I remember when I was a kid, I used to be like, yes, Oregon cracked the top 25. Now it's like, we lose, like, we drop out of the top 25 for 2 weeks, and people are like, I hate this program. I hate everybody. We need to, like, cancel everything. We should, like, suspend the football program for, like, the rest of the year. Just pack it in. We'll try again next year. And this team was actually good. And Pelham and Frost deserve a lot of credit. People are like, oh, it shouldn't take him, like, a year, or, like, a half a year or whatever. It's like, dude, come on. He turned it around. We have 10 wins. The goal was to get to 10 wins.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they held Stanford to 36. They held Cal, which is one of the most explosive, to 28. They held USC, which had a ton of talent, to 28. Like, I'm not sure what these people want at some point. It reminds me of this guy that used to sit behind me at football games, and one of the reasons we switched our season ticket spots is because I couldn't stand sitting in front of him anymore. Because all he did was complain. Like, if Marcus Mariota threw, like, a pass that was a little outside of the receiver's grasp, he would be like, come on, Marcus, you gotta hit that. And it's like, dude, really? He just hit, like, 20 in a row, and now you're upset about it?
You can't handle the negative, Nancy.
Yeah. And there was, like, another guy, there was another play, too, where there was, like, a running back that was, like, getting stuffed, and he was about to, like, cut up the field for, like, a huge gain, and a linebacker caught him from behind, and he, like, the quarter, just in time as he was crossing the line of scrimmage, the guy got like 2 yards. And this guy is pissed because he got tackled forward instead of behind. Like, why do you come to these games? You just seem to hate everything. Like, you don't get any enjoyment out of this. I don't know why you come. And have season tickets. Like, why do you continually do this to yourself? So, the one bowl game that Oregon could get into mathematically is the Rose Bowl. Right now, Oregon, Stanford is sitting at number 9.
Yeah, Stanford can beat Notre Dame and then win the Pac-12 title. They can maybe still squeeze into the playoff, which opens up the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, I don't see a scenario. Alabama's in. Clemson is in. Oklahoma. So yeah, if Stanford beats Notre Dame, Notre Dame's out. I'm looking at Oklahoma's schedule, who's playing super hot right now, except for the close win over TCU. They play Oklahoma State on the 28th. So that's going to remove Oklahoma State's couple spots behind Stanford. So the Big 12 is going to get a team. Probably Oklahoma. So that really leaves it down to... Actually, that's not true. It depends. See, I don't even know if Stanford's going to get in, because Michigan State's going to represent... If Michigan State loses to Penn State, then they won't make the playoff, even if they win the Big Ten.
Yeah.
If Iowa wins out, they better make the playoff. Because at that point, it's like they just went undefeated, won the Big Ten, and you're not going to let them in over a team that lost.
Yeah, that's a joke at that point.
Well, these whole rankings have been a joke all year. How is Iowa 10 when Oklahoma is... How is Iowa undefeated? And they've had like 4 good wins. And Oklahoma's above them. And Oklahoma lost to Texas. People act like that game didn't even happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's infuriating. Alabama has looked unstoppable. I'll give them some credit for just looking amazing outside of the Ole Miss game. Michigan State had the win over Ohio State. But then again, I don't even think Ohio State's that good. Ohio State is number 8. They don't have a quality win this year. Their wins are over Virginia Tech, Hawaii, Northern Illinois. And the Northern Illinois one went down to the wire. Western Michigan, Indiana, they almost dropped that game. They beat Maryland. They beat Penn State, who is awful. They look good against Rutgers, but everybody looks good against Rutgers. They were 2 touchdowns apart from Minnesota. They lost the only ranked game on their schedule. They had 1 ranked team so far on their schedule, and they lost. How can we even like rank these guys in the top 10? Like, I'm looking at who I would pick above them. I'm upset about this. I'm upset. I would pick North Carolina to win. I would pick Florida State. I would pick Florida. I would pick Oklahoma State. I would pick I'm picking Michigan this week. Straight up, I'd pick Stanford. I'd pick Baylor, Notre Dame, Michigan State. I'd pick Iowa. I'd pick every team. I would put Ohio State at like 15. They have not done anything this year. And there's this guy on College Game Day Final, and he's been ranking them number 1 this whole year. And he's like, well, they haven't lost a game. They've won 25 in a row. It's like, yeah, of course. They've been playing nobody.
Right, it's all the cupcake teams.
And they've been looking average at best, mediocre most of the time. And it's like, oh, well, they've won all these games in a row. It's like, yeah, most of those games are from last year. And this one guy was like, the win over Minnesota. They're like, winning in Minnesota, scrapped out a win, did it with a backup quarterback. Like, their backup quarterback is Cardale Jones. Like, he gets so, you can't give him be giving him all this credit for being like this amazing quarterback, winning the Pac, the national championship, and being like, oh, Ohio State won with Cardale Jones. Like, he's a starter on almost every other team in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And scraping out a win over Michigan or Minnesota when the rest of your games also suck doesn't make you like a good team. So, I mean, other people are like, oh, but they're so talented. Like, they pass the eye test. Like, how do they pass the eye test? They play like, awful. So, I mean, wrapping up, Michigan State could win the Big Ten. Iowa could win the Big Ten. I think if the Big Ten championship has one or fewer losses, they're going to get in. I think Oklahoma, if they lose to Oklahoma State, then Oklahoma State? Oklahoma State's way too low, though. I don't think they would jump Stanford at that point if they've lost to Baylor. Man, I think Oklahoma State would have to beat Oklahoma. Stanford would have to beat Notre Dame.
Yeah, I mean, mathematically, the Ducks can still go, but it's just going to take a lot.
It's incredibly unlikely.
So the safest thing is just to mentally prepare for the Foster Farms Bowl.
You want the Foster Farms Bowl to happen. It's not going to happen.
I kind of want it. It's just down the road from me.
I know, that's why you
selfish
want it.
Fan of me wants it to happen, and I can afford going to that game.
Yeah. Exactly.
It'll probably be like $5 tickets.
Probably.
My dinner will probably cost more than my game tickets.
True. Yeah. Otherwise, it's like the Alamo Bowl or the Holiday Bowl.
But really, I'm
just proud of this team. I love this team.
Would the Rose Bowl be great? Obviously. But, you know, realistically, let's take the Holiday Bowl. That sounds fun.
Yeah. You know what? You know what? I'm just happy with this team. Made a bowl game. Beat Washington. They're going to get 15 more practices. That's going to be huge. Oregon basketball, looking great. Oregon football, looking great. And people still dislike this team for some reason. Beat Washington. Oregon State's going to be an easy win this weekend. So here at Sling and Quack, we just want to wish all you guys a happy Thanksgiving. Or to those people who don't live in the United States but are still Duck fans, we hope you have a great weekend. Any closing comments, Sean?
It's Civil War week. Always a fun time. Let's keep that winning streak alive.
Yeah. I think it's going to be so difficult. The spread's minus 34.
Oh, woof.
Which seems low. All right, well, that'll do it for the two of us. I'm Rusty. That's Sean. We'll see you guys next week.